We get to welcome to the program Dr. Jerry Punch. His appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. Shop local. Shop New Balance Knoxville right there in the Suburban Shopping Center just west of Westtown Mall. Doc, you've been a part of the New Balance family for quite some time, and they make it very easy to be, don't they?
Oh, they really do, and they do a great job. And I noticed that you're a member of the family. So is Jimmy. We all walk in with our New Balances on, and you know, mine are just the regular ones I use to run and jog with, and I also wear them on the sidelines and the pits. And I wear them at the hospital now that I'm back playing doctor. I guess I shouldn't say playing doctor. I am a doctor. but I played one on television, maybe. But, yeah, the New Balance family, the folks, you know, Sharon and David and all their staff at the New Balance of Knoxville take such great care. And because they know they're going to give you a product you're going to love, and it's going to make your life easy in terms of whether you're working out, whether it's Orange Theory or whatever you're doing, going to, you know, just going for a jog or for a walk. Are going to work and wearing them, and they know that you're going to come back and want more and more, which is what I've done for many, many years. And now, what you guys do? Yeah, you wear your. And I'm guessing you were styling with your orange Tennessee top and your New Balances, which look nice when you were at the stadium this week. By the way,
absolutely.
So yeah, the folks at New Balance and Knoxville will take great care of you as they have of us and this show for many, many years.
Let's get right to the phones where Jim joins us. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Jim.
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
Good afternoon.
Before I get to my question for Dr. Punch and the rest of you, that Florida State game, I was wondering if Jeremy Pruitt was back on the staff setting that final defense up.
Wow.
Looked a little bit reminded me of that Brigham Young defense. Remember that a couple of years ago?
Yeah. Yep. It was event, not prevent.
That's a bad way to lose. You know, the spotting of the football by officials is not an exact science. I think we'd all agree with that. The spotting of the football was a factor on a particular play Saturday, and there was a lot of question whether Judge Heupel should have challenged the spot, which he did not. Now this question might be great for Gerald Hodges later on, but I'd like your guys' opinion. Can a replay official does it take a coach's challenge to get a further review of a spot, or if a replay official thinks that a spot may be off, he can go for further he can stop play and go for further review on his own. He doesn't have to wait for a coach's challenge, because I don't see too many where the replay official would do that on his own, unless there are and I'm not aware of it. What's your thought on that?
I'm pretty sure that the replay official can stop it right there. If you have a play that is reviewable, I think the replay official can intervene, whether it's a touchdown, whether it's out of bounds, or whether it's first down. And so I thought the replay official should have stopped it. There was a fundamental error made by the officials in that when the ball is down, you don't pick it up and throw it toward the hash mark or away from that and then measure it. You measure it from where the guy went down. So that was a mistake to pick up the football and throw it somewhere and then say, oh, now we're going to measure it. Heupel could have called a timeout. He said he only had one timeout left. There's 6.5 minutes left. Here's the other thing. There's no assurance he's going to win the challenge, right? So if he loses that challenge and he's losing his timeout, that's kind of a double whammy, right? So he elected not to go in that direction, but he did say he was consulting with the official on the side. Now, you guys are looking at this upstairs, right? Obviously, they were not. That leads me to another problem I have. Doc, you may know this better than I do. I'll ask you about this. They did not have a whole lot of camera angles to show. Mm-mm. They had a camera angle down the line of scrimmage on the west side to the east. They did not have a camera on the east looking west. And no longer in many games that I watch do they have that cart that goes back and forth.
Sideline cart. Yeah.
I don't see that either. I am told there are fewer cameras being used by SEC Network and ESPN. Doc, that can affect an outcome if you don't have a good angle also.
Well, it's a catch-22. It can, exactly, as you said and as you described it. And in the games I did last year when we were told, we didn't know, our crew didn't know at times how many we're going to have because of budget restrictions and who they could get where and travel limitations, et cetera, and access to the sidelines. And some conferences still have limitations on if it's a game between the SEC and the ACC, you got to go with whatever is the most restrictive guideline. If the ACC says we don't want sideline carts, then you don't have sideline carts. So, and quite honestly, there were games we had, they said you could choose between a low end zone or a sideline cart, and whatever is more valuable depending on the stadium to get the best shot. So, and that's a call by the director. You still are down probably three cameras at times or more. Now, the primetime games are going to have the full, all the bells and whistles. Primetime Saturday night game, bells and whistles. Iowa State had bells and whistles, everything you needed. There's a lot of things you don't have. You don't have super slow-mos and things like that, which cost a lot of extra money. They're trying to cut expenses, cut revenue, you know, back. But then on these games, they're trying to cut personnel. So, I noticed they were trying to give replays and looks. You know, getting back to Jim's great question about the challenging the spot, you know, I've often wondered, and I saw the same thing. I saw it several times Saturday night where a coach on the sidelines, and Jim, I've stood on the sidelines, and I thought I know the game pretty well. Not as well maybe as some head coaches, but I have seen really smart head coaches make poor decisions on the sidelines because there's so much going on down there. There's so much happening in chaos that you don't really get a chance. And the referee will come over, and depending on if it's an SEC referee or it's an AC, you know, depends on if they're the other conference, they may not explain everything to you. They may just simply say, here, what do you want to do, coach? You want to go this or that? But a lot of referees will explain to you. My point is this. I think coaches, and everybody has people, you should have somebody who's a former coach. They should have somebody who's a former coach really sharp to sit in the press box, in a box, watch the telecast, and be able to have a channel and say, got to challenge that. That's a mistake. And no one, just to give you that information, I saw a coach decline a penalty Saturday night in a game, in an SEC game, which everybody in the world knows he should have taken. He declined the penalty and gave a team a chance to kick a point-blank field goal. He should have moved them back 10 yards at least, but he didn't. And no one, I mean, I think he got confused and realized later that he made a mistake. I think afterwards he realized. So they should have somebody in the press box watching what we're watching. You know, I've seen it happen when I'm calling games, and I'm thinking to myself, and what we saw, him picking up the ball, it'd be like someone picking up your ball on the green, going to the golf cart, getting your putter, and coming back and putting it down. Yeah. Oh, I'm going to be close, but close doesn't count. I mean, that putt could be a huge difference, and that spot was a huge difference for Tennessee.
Did you guys think just when the play was run that he had actually made it, or it was just too close to call?
I thought he made it.
Yeah, I thought he made it too.
From my vantage point, and I'm sitting close to the 50, looking at that angle, I didn't know. And then when I watched the replay, I thought he made it, but I still didn't know. Then when I saw a still picture, absolutely, I thought he made it.
Well, obviously a critical call there, but that's the way it goes sometimes. Guys, I really appreciate all the information. You guys have a great afternoon.
Sure do appreciate it, Jim. Thank you very much. Let's check in with Don. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Don.
Hello, gentlemen.
Hello.
Saturday was a interesting game and an exciting game in some areas, but also a very gut-punching, disappointing game. But, Jimmy, you started talking when you first came on about the double foul there
right
on the punter or the kick return. Here's what I was thinking, and you can ask Gerald later because I probably won't get on. Well, I've already used my call today. If both penalties were accepted, it would seem to me what you would do, you go back to the line of scrimmage, you mark off half the distance to the goal, which is what they did. But the second penalty was on the other team. So why would you not then turn around and mark off 15 yards?
Well, because the rule book says that if you have offsetting penalties, you replay the down. If Tennessee had declined the penalty on Pitt, Tennessee would have gotten the ball, but the penalty occurred on about the 10-yard line, so you would have enforced the penalty, which would have been accepted, and you move it to the 5. Now, that's the rule.
Okay.
So,
no, well, I'm saying if the whole thing had been explained out, because I can remember a time when you had two penalties that occurred on both sides on the play, when they would mark off the initial penalty, whatever it was, and then turn around and mark off the penalty the other way.
That depends on what the penalty was.
Yeah, because one can be a live ball, one can be a dead ball.
That's correct. And one could be a legal procedure, and you would mark it off, and then one could be a post-game late hit. So you'd mark off 5, and then you'd mark off 15. So it depends on what the penalties are, and depends on whether live ball or dead ball.
Okay, doesn't make sense to me, but hey, a lot of things don't make sense to me. Going forward, I'm not sure what to do about the whole QB situation. I'm tired of watching Milton overthrow receivers like a lot of folks are. But at the same time, as good as I thought Hooker came in, give you a chance to win, making some plays, especially with his feet, he still turned the ball over twice in this period of time he was in there. And I think that's a big thing with the coaching staff. Mm-hmm. And maybe why he's not been, you know, pushed toward the front of the line now. So I really don't know. You know, I mean, if you'd asked me any time during that game, especially the first quarter, I'd said, play anybody you got. How's that walk-on from North Carolina? Yeah, whatever, because I'm so tired of seeing that. But anyhow, it sure was nice to see one of our boys get the Jameis Winston's first pass completion yesterday.
Yeah, Marquez Callaway. Yeah.
Yep. And see him in the starting lineup. So, well, Jimmy, I know you love for me to call in and complain about this shit.
But you do best.
I'll just leave it with this. I'll leave it with this because y'all been talking about the, you know, spotting the ball and, you know, what the protocol was. Okay, so this is one you're going to let. Okay, Tennessee's playing ACC team. They got ACC officials, and there's about three combined, maybe four things on that one play. Number one, as you mentioned yesterday morning, the official was out of position. I have no idea why he's behind the play. They didn't measure the ball where it's – I've always seen it measured. I have no idea what was in their head. Then they throw the ball to a guy running across the field to do the spotting, and then the replay booth doesn't look at it. Let's see, SEC versus ACC, officiating ACC. Yeah, I'm sure there's nothing going on there.
I'm sure there wasn't either. SEC officials would be calling the Tennessee game at Pitt, by the way.
Doc, I know you're having a ball of fun.
Yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah. Well, you know, I saw what happened, and I cannot for the life of me understand why you wouldn't leave the ball there with the guy's hand on it and measure the first down. I mean, it not only impacts the game, but it impacts it. It affects their credibility by doing what they did. That's just foolish on their part. And these guys are good officials, no matter what conference they're in. Well, maybe with the exception of one, but they're good officials and they're professionals. And it just impacts their ethics and credibility when this kind of stuff happens. Because then you can come back and get and second guess it, which everyone should be doing.
I'm not absolving them, but I do wonder: are officials now more in tune to hurrying up and putting the ball, spotting it because of hurry up offenses?
Yep, that's a good point. Really good point. Yeah, they're being encouraged to get the ball spotted and get out of the way because there's not going to be a substitution. They can't substitute. You can't stand over the ball. We want to snap the ball. Yeah. It costs the first down.
We've got more with Doc Punch coming up. His appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. Shop local. Shop New Balance Knoxville right there in the Suburban Shopping Center just west of Westtown Mall. If you have a question or comment for Doc, 656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. Let's check in with Randy. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Randy.
Hello, good afternoon, gentlemen. How you doing today?
Doing well. How are you?
Good, Randy.
Doing fine. Hey, I've got a couple comments on a couple subjects that I want to mention. One is the football game and one is NASCAR. I wanted to ask Dr. Punch, I remember reading a magazine, NASCAR magazine, about 30 years ago that said Scott Blomquist was on the way up as a rising NASCAR star. He was running a couple of ARCA races at that time. And he's a local legend on dirt tracks around here and still is. What happened to him? How come he never did make it in NASCAR?
You know, I watched him. I didn't go to many dirt races back then, but the few that I got to go to, which was the week in Daytona at Volusia County Speedway, where he would come down and run against the best of the best in dirt. And I was so impressed with him. And you're right, he did get a few shots, but not in really good cars. And quite honestly, what I asked somebody that, like, you know, about 20 years ago, I said, whatever happened to Scott Blomquist? He still races, by the way, and he still has some, you know, and he's still successful. But they were telling me, one guy told me, in fact, Red Farmer said to me that guy makes so much money running the big dirt shows around the country, is for living his life the way he lives it. Why would he want to come run 30th in NASCAR at these speeds? In equipment that can't win and can't even run in the top 25. Why would he want to do that when he can't get the good shot? And I thought to myself, well, you know what? If you can't get a good shot, I'm sure he had opportunities. And ARCA's a different world. ARCA's a bunch of inexperienced drivers. You're basically out there. And I love ARCA. I love the racing, but there's so many entry-level people on the racetrack. And one of the officials said, we have a whole field full of unguided missiles out there. These guys, I'm not sure they have a lot of experience, and there's probably a handful of guys that do. And you have to go out there and not make sure you don't get caught up in somebody else's wreck. So why would he want to do that? I'm like you. I believed he had talent and had the ability, but just couldn't get an opportunity, which is what it's all about in big-time stock car racing.
Yes, good answer. Yes, I agree with that. Hey, one quick thing on the football game the other day, and I know this is a pet peeve of mine, strength and conditioning, but I really like Josh Heupel's personality. I don't know how good of a coach he's going to be. But he don't grab people's face masks on national TV or in private that I know of. And he don't berate the players like Pruitt did. I like his coaching style. I don't know if it's going to be successful, but I like his coaching style. But one thing on the strength and conditioning, there's three criteria for a strength and conditioning coach. One is injury prevention. Two is performance enhancement. How strong you are, you know, big, fast, stronger, and all that. And the third is injury rehabilitation. There are going to be some injuries, but there's way too many right now. And I do see the players being bigger, faster, and stronger, and I think they can compete with about everybody except Georgia and Alabama when it comes to strength and being big and fast and strong, except for Georgia and Alabama. But why? I mean, that's part of being a strength and conditioning coach. There's too many injuries out there right now. Yeah. What do you see?
Yeah, I see that, and I've stood on the sidelines all these years, and I couldn't tell you why one year a team would have like three critical injuries. The next year they'd have 30 starters out in the first half of the season with the same strength and conditioning coach, the same programs, the same athletic trainers, the same protocols. It's just no rhyme or reason. I mean, programs that I knew had great strength and conditioning, I mean, coaches and guys that when Florida State was in their heyday and going to some of the schools in Texas when Mack Brown was there and at BYU, you just couldn't figure out why. There was no rhyme or reason why they would lose all these players, all these game losses per player in one year. The next year they have none. And and the programs are the same. So, you know, how does a quarterback take one step, two steps backward and fall down and have a high ankle sprain? It looks like it's pretty innocuous kind of injury, but it's not. And it takes quite a while to heal.
Right, right. Okay, thank you for your time, gentlemen. I always appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Randy. Thanks. Let's go next to Bill. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Bill.
Hey, yeah, for Jimmy and the doc, on the missed field goal and the run back, once the field goal's missed, that's a change of possession, right? And right. Then he runs it back. If it's offsetting penalties, I've seen offsetting penalties before and the play stands. So, I mean, what is different? I mean, this is something you can ask Grayson later, but I don't know why that wouldn't have been a factor.
Well, here's the rule on that, Bill.
The referee followed him down the sideline and ruled a touchdown.
Yeah, that's right. But there were two flags on the play. You see that all the time. You see a ruling of a touchdown, and then when they assess what the flag is, they either honor the touchdown or they take it back. So that's not.
But they're offsetting. But offsetting, I have seen them because they were offsetting. They'll raise their hands first down or touchdown.
If you have offsetting penalties and both are accepted, you replay the down. If you have offsetting penalties and neither is accepted, then the play stands. If you have a change of possession, which they did, and there were offsetting penalties, Bill, here's the rule.
Yes.
If Tennessee had declined the penalty on Pittsburgh, Tennessee gets the ball. But you know where they get it? They get it on the 10-yard line, and then they assess the clipping penalty, and they start it on their own 5-yard line. So that's where Tennessee would have got the ball. Right. So Heupel decided, I don't want the ball on my 5. I'm going to make them punt. He knew they weren't going to kick another field goal. I'm going to make them punt because I don't think they can punt it and down it inside the 5. Well, they did. But that's the rule. Yeah. If Tennessee had gotten the ball back, they'd have got it on their own 5-yard line. That make sense?
Yeah. If that's the case, when they got the re-kick and they chose to punt, were they assessed a penalty?
No, because they were offsetting penalties.
It was just replay the down.
Replay the down.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
Sure do appreciate it, Bill. 656-9900, 656-9900.
I want to bring up a subject that I want you guys to, I'll be listening to the address with Gerald Hodges later on, and that is the fact that many conferences, exception of maybe one or two, I think they share, use collaborative replay. Replay official in the booth upstairs, and then they have collaborative replay at a central location, Birmingham be the SEC, Greensboro or Pittsburgh, as it works for the ACC and others. But then you have some officials, like I think in the Big Ten, that stand there and look at a video replay. It's like we used to do it before we had collaborative replay, back when we had covered wagons before we had cars. But that's not a statement about how they do it, but it really is. And they're looking at a tiny little 4-inch screen. And my question is this: if you're an official and you're putting that referee, you know, where he's standing and staring at a 4-inch screen trying to see things. I know from calling NASCAR races over the years in a broadcast booth, we had 8 to 10-inch television monitors in front of us. But I would get home, not just me, others would get home, and we would look at the replay of the race or the game on a big screen and realize, how did I not see that? Because there's lots of things I couldn't see on my little monitor, which is now why television booths have these big, giant, flat-screen TVs in front of the announcer, so you can see what the people at home can see. Otherwise, you're at a huge disadvantage. So I don't understand why they still put that poor referee in the Big Ten in a situation where he has to make a call on a screen that's smaller than he has in his car that he drove from the airport.
Well, first off, I don't know how small their screen is in the Big Ten. I know in the SEC games, I went in their booth, and it's not a small TV for SEC games. So I can't speak to what the Big Ten size of their screen is. That's ridiculous.
But I'm talking about when you have to make the call from the field. They don't let them use
the field.
From the field.
Well, I thought that guy was in consultation with the guy that's up in the press box.
I'm thinking, which conference is it doesn't allow?
The Big Ten does not have collaborative, but they have a replay guy upstairs.
Okay, a guy upstairs. Well, I thought it was one conference that only had guys making a call on the field.
I didn't know that.
And I know it's not the Big 12. The Big 12 has it, because I've talked to the guys at the Big 12. Yeah. They have it in Texas.
Well, the Pac-12 has it because they had a lawyer that overruled a guy in the booth one time.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
Walking by the door. Yeah, do this.
He was calling from a casino, though. That's where lawyers hang out and watch games.
We did ask Gerald about why if collaborative. I didn't get him to compare the Big Ten because he didn't want to go there. But I asked him about his collaborative replay helped you in the booth, and he said absolutely. When you have not just you got two sets of eyes: the guy on the field, the guy in the press box. And then three other sets of eyes in Birmingham. He said, yes, that helps. So I think he's a little bit baffled as to why the Big Ten doesn't have it, because they certainly can afford it.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, I went through the SEC collaborative replay booth in Birmingham and walked in, and they showed me how it all works, where everybody sits, where the director official sits, and they sit up front, and he's watching all the games at one time, and it's like 4 people on the phones at one time to Gerald, who's at the game, helping him see what he needs to see and making their call and their interpretation. But I just think that, you know, games are so critical. And like this game this past weekend, we spend way too much time talking about a poor placement. But that's sad. That was a ball placement that impacted the football game to some extent.
Yep. Final segment for us with Dr. Jerry Punch. Let's get right back to the phones. And it is Charlie who joins us next. Hi, Charlie. How are you?
How are you guys doing?
Doing well, thanks.
Dr. Punch, I apologize. Dr. Punch, I apologize for not having a racing question. But actually, guys, this is a question. I apologize for not knowing the names of the guys that it occurred on, but the running back for Pitt was going down, and he rolled off the back of our defender. Well, to me, it looked like the offensive lineman actually picked him up and almost helped him get his balance back, or almost looked like he carried him. And my question was, is that legal? I mean, can do you recall it?
I don't. I think an offensive lineman can help assist somebody getting back up on their feet, but I don't think he can. Well, I know he can't carry the guy. They allow you to push from behind, but you can't pick up one of your ball carriers and carry him. No, you can't do that.
Well, it may not occur like it looked, but it looked to me like the offensive lineman actually helped him get off our defender's back and, you know, progress his yardage. I don't know. I mean, I was just curious.
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Well, thanks. Appreciate it.
All right, Charlie, thank you very much. Doc, it used to be that it was simple that you could push, you couldn't pull. Still pretty much drawn along those lines, but it's really something to see when it becomes a scrum.
Yeah.
And it's whichever side has the most strength. And if you get all five of those offensive linemen, you can see that pile move a good five or more yards.
Yeah, and I still contend that you can on there almost every fourth and goal, you'll see the quarterback or whoever gets the ball get someone come in behind him in the pile and sort of give him a shove from behind, and that's a call that can be made on almost every one of those. Just like holding can be called on every single pass play. If you watch it closely enough, you can go back and find someone whose arms are outside the arm to shoulder width of the pads and have an arm around back, and they can call it, but it's just up to whether they call it or not. Yeah, you're right about an assist. I saw that where the lineman gave the running back a little bit of an assist. He was just being polite to help him up.
Let's go next to Luke. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Luke.
Hey, guys. I was just kind of following up the previous caller about the penalties on the field goal return. I've seen a lot of talk about the block in the back by Jeremy Banks, and I'm assuming all three of y'all were probably at the game. Was it not obvious in person like it was on TV that it was, you know, pretty clearly a block in the back?
Yeah, it was a block in the back. It was a penalty.
Okay, that's kind of what I thought. And when I seen people talking about it online, I was kind of didn't know where that was coming from. So that's all I had, and enjoy the show, and thanks for taking my call.
Okay.
Yeah, sure do appreciate that. Yeah, that was I didn't see anyone question whether it was a penalty. I just saw a lot of discussion as to was it adjudicated properly.
Yeah, I heard a lot of whether it was adjudicated properly. I did hear a number of people that didn't think it was a penalty. I had some of that thrown my way.
I thought it was close. I mean, it was very close to the side, but I still thought when all was said and done, it was behind. It was a hit that came from behind that left shoulder.
Yeah.
And so I give him credit for trying to finagle his way to make sure it was a side block. I just didn't think he got there. Let's go next to Jimmy. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Jimmy.
Yes. Hey, Jimmy, I asked you a question yesterday. You might have answered it already today.
Okay.
It's the same thing. It's the same question on missed field goal. The referee said there was a change of possession, and yet we had to they got to re-kick the football. So since there was a change of possession, why did they get to re-kick it?
Because both penalties were accepted. If both penalties are accepted, you replay the down. If Tennessee had declined the penalty on Pitt, then Tennessee would have gotten the ball. But they would have gotten the ball in their own 5-yard line because the block in the back occurred on the 10. So you would mark off 5 yards from the 10 back to your 5. And Josh Heupel, and I asked him today, was that explained to you by the officials? And the answer was yes. He didn't want to take the ball on his own 5. He wanted to pit to repunt or replay. And he knew they'd punt. They weren't going to try another field goal. That would have been silly. So he thought that they would probably get better field position if they forced a punt as opposed to take it on their own 5.
Well, unfortunately, we got it down on the 1-yard line. So.
It was a 3.
I appreciate you finding. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Okay, I appreciate you finding that answer out.
Yes, sir.
I've been a ball fan. I went to my first game in 1965.
Wow.
So, I've been watching them a long time. I'm not a coach and I'm not a referee. I'm just a ball fan. but I appreciate what you guys do.
Jimmy, we sure Thank do you. Appreciate the call. Thank you so much.
Doc, a couple of things real quick. There was Kyle Busch fined $50,000. What happened?
Yeah, when he was involved in a wreck early in Darlington, he came flying down pit road and drove in the garage area at a speed that was higher than it should have been, and they were very close to fans who were walking by. NASCAR said it was actions detrimental to stock car racing, safety violations, and a violation of NASCAR's, mentor. It was basically a mentor violation, a monitor violation. So they said it was dangerous, and so luckily he didn't hurt somebody. And he was angry. He ran across orange cones, ran over orange cones, going in the garage area at an excessive speed with a damaged race car. So they fined him $50,000. He'd been involved in an accident on lap 125 involving Austin Dillon. So he was angry, upset. He's in the playoffs, so that was pretty ugly.
And the next race is in Bristol, correct?
Bristol, Tennessee, this weekend, night race. It'll be at 7:30, the Bass Pro Shops race there. Of course, Friday night, the Food City 300 up there for the Xfinity cars. And then Thursday night, a doubleheader starting at 6 o'clock. The good news is on Saturday, they are, because of many of the crew guys, I know this from doing college football on Saturday and going back to doing a NASCAR race on Sunday, many of the drivers and fans and crew members are huge college football fans, so they're going to show on the big screen the Tennessee game at noon on Saturday, so the guys working on the race cars and the drivers there can watch the game. And many of the fans who are going to Neyland Stadium, for heaven's sakes, go and cheer on the Vols on Saturday. And then when it's over, you got plenty of time to get to Bristol for the 7:30 race on Saturday night.
Doc, always appreciate it. Thank you so much. Have a fantastic week, and we will talk to you next Monday.
We'll talk to you next Monday, guys. Thanks a lot.
That's Dr. Jerry Punch. His appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. Shop local. Shop New Balance Knoxville right there in the Suburban Shopping Center just west of Westtown Mall.